There we had another one from the Osmond Brothers. As I reconnected with Sonny, somehow I messed up my phone on my end, and now Sonny's here on the phone with me.
That's Joe's fault.
That's Joe Mullins' fault?
Yeah, that's Joe's fault. Oh, my goodness. How's it going up there, okay?
It's doing real good. It's nice up here. I was planning a trip down to see you a couple weeks ago. You didn't know about it yet, and I had to cancel it. But I still want to come down and just hang around for a day. I need to come down every once in a while to kind of get away from work and come down and see what you're up to. And
yeah.
I'll let you know, though. I'll let you know.
Yeah, hey, you'd be sure to let me know.
Yeah, well, that would be kind of bad if I just showed up without. But I had plans, but then my plans changed, so I never told you I had any until just now. So
no, that's okay.
That's
no
okay.
Problem.
Hey, every time I talk to, I talked to Joe Mullins this week and, of course, Bill Emerson. Every time I talk to one of those banjo players, they want to do nothing but talk about the Rocky Top banjo.
It's kind of weird. There's one difference, big difference in the Rocky Top, and actually all my banjos. I designed a new tone ring, and it's kind of different than the normal tone ring, and it just kind of gives it a more open sound. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but Kristen Benson has got one. And her banjo, and she just raves about it, and then Emerson's got the Rocky Top, and Joe's got the Rocky Top, Bill Evans has a Rocky Top, and
Did Tony get one last year?
No.
Okay.
No, he was going to, but he didn't.
Okay.
Anyway, they all just absolutely went crazy over them. They just said this is different than anything they've ever had. And Bill Emerson told me he had 11 banjos, and that was the best one he had. And I find that hard to believe, but I mean, you know, guy tells you that, you don't have nothing else to go on. So I'm real happy with the results. And I think Emerson has recorded with it, and Joe has recorded with it. And I heard some of the Emerson stuff, and it is really good. It's a really different sound, and it's a mahogany banjo and with nickel hardware, and then the gold tone ring. And I've done that before with the other tone ring, and I didn't get really good results with it. But I've really gotten great results with this one. I know the other guy that's got one of those things, two more people, a guy named Jeremy Avery in Chicago has one, and Rick Stern, who has now, I think, 4 or 5 Chief Banjos.
Yeah, he's got one in every flavor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you've got yours is a maple, isn't it?
Correct. I have a maple Chief, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great. They're good, really, really good banjos. But this has got that tone ring in it. And it's just a little. It's got an open, different open sound. So.
Well, that when I've talked to prior to you coming on, when I've had Bill on and other people, and Bill Emerson, and talking to Joe Mullins this week, when we were trying to set up a conference with him, they all had said the same thing. And maybe this is what you're saying. There's just something extra there.
Yeah, it's just different. It's just a different sound, and I'm pleased with it. To me, all people who build banjos, they have one thing in mind, that they're trying to recreate the old master tone sound from the 30s, and so far it has not been done. And from what I can hear, though, this banjo is as close to any that I've heard. It's very close to the old sound. Emerson liked it so well that he bought a tone ring and put in a gold, gold, maple sheath that he has.
Oh, really?
Bill's got three of my banjos. He's got the Rocky Top and a Maple and a Walnut. And I think he recorded with all of them, but then he liked the sound of this so well that he bought a another tone ring, of the new tone ring, and put it in the Maple banjos.
Now, to do that, does he have to change the rim?
No, all they have to do is just take the tone ring out and put this one in.
Really?
They fit perfectly, and just there's no trimming or cutting or anything like that. Just take the tone ring out and put this one in. That's all you do.
I might have to think about that, just to give it a try.
Well, they're good. They're very good.
Hey, listen, go ahead.
If you want one of my... I can get a good price on
it. Yeah, I know. Okay, all right. We'll talk. Well, when I come down, we'll talk about that. Hey, I wanted to wish you a happy Father's Day for tomorrow. I won't talk to you then.
Oh, well, same to you.
I appreciate that
a great deal, and I'm going to go up later when I get done here. I'm going to go up for my dad's buried and kind of spend a little bit of time with him. A lot of people believe in that, but I get some enjoyment out of it. Maybe it's ego, I don't know what it is, but I just go up and sit where he's buried and just think.
Yeah.
You know, funny thing about that, when my dad died, we had a service, and then they went out to the graveyard, of course, and as they started to lower the casket down in the grave, it got real, really, really dark, and rained. It started raining, and rained as hard as I have ever seen it rain in my life before or since. And it was only about 10 or 12, 15, 20 feet or something like that to my car from where the grave was. And so I took my mother and put her in the car, and I got in, and I don't know, maybe my son was in there, I don't know who else was in the car. But I looked over there, and it was raining. I mean, Steve, it's raining as hard as you can ever imagine in your life. And there beside the grave, as they were lowering the casket in the grave, was Bill Monroe and Lance Leroy. And it was raining so hard, Bill had a hat on, and it was raining so hard that water was literally pouring off the brim of his hat.
Wow.
And he didn't have to be there, and Les didn't have to be there, but I never forgot that. And he came over to the window of the car, and I rolled the window down, and it's still just pouring. And that water was really just cascading off his hat brim. And when he bent over, and he told my mother, he said, if you ever need anything, you just have to call me, that's all.
Hmm.
And I never forgot that. Uh-huh. That was it was just something that it happened, and I never will forget it. It was just a magical thing. Uh-huh. And I certainly appreciated him doing that. And Bill had been in Murfreesboro that morning, and he drove himself, and Bill Monroe was one of the worst drivers that I've ever seen. He just absolutely, he couldn't see very well, and he was a bad driver, really bad. And he drove himself from Murfreesboro to Gallatin, where the service was, and that would be probably 45 miles or something like that, and he drove himself from Murfreesboro to Gallatin to be there.
Hmm.
And I appreciated that too. Kind of funny, because we were at the funeral home, and they were doing the service, and the preacher was standing up there talking, and there was kind of a rustling sound. And it was like you knew that something had happened.
Hmm.
No big noise, just a little shuffling sound. And I looked to the back, and there stands Bill, was standing back there, and he had he had walked in the door and closed it, and he was standing back there, and he's got this white suit on and the white hat and everything, and I thought, my gosh, it looks like God standing back there. It was kind of funny. But I really appreciated Bill doing that. He was, that was a very, very, very kind gesture and on his part, and I never forgot it. I never will, neither.
How long ago was that, Sonny, that your dad passed? I know you told me, I forgot.
It was November the 3rd of 1981. 81, I think. 81 or 82. I'd have to. 81, I think it was.
I've heard you tell the story, and you've told it on here before also, about that year, that summer that you went to play with Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys, and that your dad picked you up down in Kentucky after you were kind of done with that bit of it. And that story has always kind of intrigued me. That first, you were what, 13, 14 years old?
14, yeah.
14, and then was it down in... why do I want to think it was LaGrange? Was it in Kentucky where your dad picked you up?
No, it was at, you mean when he came and got me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's in Nashville.
Nashville, okay. Okay.
Yeah. He bailed me out. I owed money for a place where I lived, which was a 2-lane hotel, and a cleaning bill. I don't know whether Monroe, but I was supposed to, and you got to remember, this is 1952. It's 1952. And I don't know whether he just thought, well, he's just a kid, you know, I don't have to pay him anything, but I was supposed to get $60 a week back then, just salary. That was pretty good salary back then.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, not anything, well, yeah, it was something to write home about, because in 1952, that's pretty good salary. But I was supposed to get 60 a week, and you know what? I never did get that. I never got that much. And, you know, bills that you make keep on going. And when my dad came to get me, he had to pay my hotel bill and the cleaning bill, too. And before I could leave town. And I didn't even say goodbye to him. I just left. Isn't that funny?
That must have been an interesting drive back home.
It was fun because it was a load. I mean, you got to remember, place yourself when you're 14 years old. And I've told you this before. Mm-hmm. I saw both of my kids at 14. They neither one could have done what I did.
No.
And I'm not patting myself on the back, but I'm just making a statement that a 14-year-old kid has got no business in a band with seasoned professional musicians like Bill Monroe and Jimmy Martin and Charlie Klein.
Hmm.
And a 14-year-old kid, there's no place there for him. I don't care if he can play or he can't play. There's no place there for him. Until you get, your mind is not even settled, you know, anything.
How did you even, that's an absolutely amazing thing, you could do that at 14 or 15 or 18 or even, you know, I guess, but how did you, okay, when you're first there and you're 14 years old and you're with Bill and Dad's not around and you're there part of the band, what was going through your head?
I don't really know, nothing. Not a thing.
That makes it easy.
They would tell me what time that if like, well, the business whole was completely different back then, because now this day and time, or for the last time I worked, it was a weekend business, and that like you played on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes Thursday, sometimes not Sunday. But back then, you did the Opry on Saturday night, and then you would go somewhere and either play on Sunday, and then you'd work the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and sometimes Friday, and then you take off for Nashville Friday night. Sometimes if we were in, like, Pennsylvania or something like that, Bill would have, there was a guy named Henry Cannon, was Minnie Pearl's husband. He had an airplane, and he would fly these artists to and from dates. And several times, I remember one time we were in, I don't know, it's in Maryland or Pennsylvania, and it was Friday, and Bill had Henry come and get him and fly him back to Nashville, and then he would fly him back up there, and then we went and played Sunset Park, which is in West Grove, Pennsylvania, on that Sunday. So the business was completely different back then, and it was a strange thing. And on that trip was the first time I'd been on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and I just marveled at that. Here's a four-lane highway right through the mountainous part of the world, and rough. I mean, you get off that turnpike, and it was hard traveling. But that was really something for me to see as a kid. Of course, other guys were used to it, I guess. But
everything you saw must have been new to you once you got in that.
Oh, it was unreal. And, you know, we played like Augusta and Atlanta and places down south, Charleston, South Carolina, and they still had the black and white thing was really bad right then. And I wasn't used to that either. And in Augusta, especially, they still had the place for the train station there where slaves were sold. When they would come in on trains, they were sold there.
Oh, they had like the auction block?
Oh, yeah, they still had that up. Ooh. And in a lot of places, we'd go and stop for gas, and they would have a white restroom and a black restroom. And it was just, you know, we think that people, they're angry, you know, black people are angry. They have a right to be. The way they were treated, they have a right to be, I think, in my mind. But we shouldn't get into that. That's a tough subject for me. Some of my best friends, one of my best friends is a black guy. And I just don't see there's no difference. I don't see black and white. And a lot of people still do, and it's sad in a way.
It's a hard thing to make go away, I think. It's maybe going away, but, you know, like you say, it's still there. Let me ask you...
It never will go away.
Yeah, probably not.
It'll be with us from now on. I mean, that's all there is to it. And that's the... one of the great scourge, I guess is the right word. It's one of the worst that could be put on anything, anybody. But... that's just people. That's the way things are.
Yeah. Hey, when you were the 14-year-old in the band, was there a member of that band that sort of looked out for you?
No. Bill Monroe promised my dad that he would look out for me, but that was the last that conversation was ever brought up. They didn't. I just was on my own.
Wow. Had you ever stayed in a motel or a hotel prior to that trip?
No, I've never been out. I had never been away from home.
Wow.
Never. By myself. Never. Not once. And I don't ever... I never stayed in a motel or... I don't even remember ever eating in a restaurant until then. And I was a farm kid, and that's all I was to it.
It really is unbelievable. You know, when you break it down, it's just unbelievable that at that age, at that time, under those circumstances, you were traveling on the road.
I know it. And you know, the first time we played the Grand Ole Opry, that old man, he had to find out real quick if he was strong enough to do anything. And strength was Bill Monroe. Strength was his big thing, how strong you were. And the first thing we did at the Opry, I've told this before, but was he played Rawhide. And you know, I'm 14 years old and not a good banjo player. And I wasn't the worst in the world, but I certainly was a long, long 1,000 hours away from being what you call a decent banjo player. And he played Rawhide, and I prayed. I said, "Lord, please let me get through this break." And here's on the Grand Ole Opry, and it's like 115 degrees on that stage, and it was in July and of 1952, and then when I took my break, he got right in back of me with that mandolin, and instead of hitting on the regular time, the downbeat, Bill would hit on the offbeat. He would hit his down on the upbeat, and I asked Jimmy Martin later. I said, "What'd he do that for?" And he said, "I don't know. He just that's just the way he is." And I mean, it was so cruel to do that. The worst guy that we ever had playing with us, I wouldn't have done him that way. Yeah. And it was almost like that he was trying to make me mess up, you know, to show me how far I was away from playing in a band like that.
I made it. Did he ever do it again?
I never did again, no. Mm-hmm. I made it through that, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would be afraid to hear the tape of it if there was anything. But I made it through that break and still had the time going and everything. And he played as fast as you could think. I mean, you know, and I had no idea what was going to play before he went out there. And he never asked me if I could play Rawhide or not.
Hmm.
But he introduced him, and he said, "Here's an old towner, one cold Rawhide." And he started into it. And I'm telling you, man, and you know, you got to realize, in 1952, the biggest majority of the Opry crowd was guys sitting in bimbo bras with white shirts on, and they would issue one of those fans, you know, the paper fans.
Yeah, like in a church or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they issued that to everybody because it was so hot in that building. There was no air conditioning in there. We didn't even know what air conditioning was. I didn't, anyway. Had no idea. It was the year after that till I knew anything about air conditioning. But anyway, and it was so hot in there, and that whole crowd was doing those fans. And you know, you ever see people watching a tennis match? They look one way and then the other way and then that way. Well, it was like that. And that whole crowd, I mean, you got 3,000 or 4,000 people sitting out there doing that with those fans all at once. And it's like dizzy. And then that old man had the gall to play Rawhide and then get behind me and play on the offbeat, play his rhythm on the offbeat. But I made it.
You made it.
I made it through it.
You made it,
and
some. You made it, and some. You did more than make it. Did he ever do that to anyone else that you saw on stage, or just notice it for you that night?
I'm sorry.
Did he ever do that to anyone else that you noticed, or did you just see it that night?
No, I never did hear him do it again. He just did it that night.
That is weird.
I never did hear him do that again. I never did.
That is so strange.
It is weird. I mean, it's really weird. And he told me one time. He said, "I was a strong man one time." He said, "I lifted 7 people off the ground at one time." And I didn't believe him. I thought, that's not true. And I asked several other people, said, "Yeah, he did. There were 7 people that was hanging on him, and he stood up with them."
Jeepers.
And he said, Sally... played the accordion with him. I can't remember her last name. Mm-hmm. Doggone it. Was a fiddle player's wife. And he said, and I lived in another, but she's another man's wife. Yeah. Oh my God!
That's just unbelievable. All those that whole period just unbelievable, and it'll never be like that again. I don't believe.
No. There'll never be another one like him. Thank God, there'll never be another one like him. And sometimes, you know what? I miss him so bad it's ridiculous. But other times I don't. It's just a terrible. It was a terrible situation to put a kid into right then, and why still? I don't know why my dad let me do that. I quit school in the next March. It was in the 10th grade, and I quit school. And I wasn't much of a student anyway, but I quit. He let me quit school to go back to work for Bill.
Hmm.
So I never understood that, but, you know, that's just the way he thought.
Well, he must have known that you were destined to do that kind of stuff, and your education's never quit. You still, every time we talk, you've been reading some kind of book. You're constantly doing book learning, if you want to call it that way.
I read probably two to three books a week.
Yeah.
Right now,
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. I got a Kindle and a Nook, and I read. I read to run the battery down on one and read the other until this battery runs down. I like to read. I get you learn an awful lot. You really learn a lot just by reading.
Yep.
A whole bunch. But anyway.
You do. You do. Well, listen, man. Go ahead.
It's
close. Yeah, it's right there somewhere. Listen, friend, I appreciate you so much for being available to do this.
Oh, that's all right. I was going to do it anyway.
Well, you have a. You going to drive your daddy's truck up to the cemetery?
I might. I got it out earlier today and had it washed and everything. I bought another truck. I'm not going to drive that one all the time anymore.
Yeah.
But I got another truck, but I got his out and had it washed and cleaned up. And it really looks good.
Good. Well, that's good. You take care of it. I know you put a lot of time into getting that thing back the way it was.
That's a lot of time and money.
Yeah.
A lot.
Well, listen, I'm going to play, for everybody out there for Father's Day, I'm going to play Flat and Scruggs' Father's Table Grace as I'm leaving today.
Yeah.
So you'll like that. All right. Sonny, I'll talk to you again. I'll come down. I'll let you know, though, before I come down, because otherwise I'd just be stupid. So I'll call you when I'm going to head down that way. We'll get together.
We'll do that, and think about that tone ring.
I will.
I can do that myself, that job. I can put them.
All right.
Put it in. Well, think about that stuff. And,
I will. I'll do it.
I'll talk to you.
All right, Sonny. You take care, buddy.
You see you. Bye.
I don't know, one of my all-time favorite people, and it gets stronger every time I talk to him, and that, folks, is Sonny Osborne. That's the way he is 24 hours a day.